Mitchell Trubisky has put up great numbers the past 2 weeks, but is the young quarterback really getting better? Plus, a look at the Cowboys' dominant defense and the upcoming matchup between that Saints' number one scoring offense versus the Ravens' number one scoring defense. And we also have mini mailbag questions, Joe Flacco's future, 49ers first rounders, and automatic first downs as a penalty. Let's get rid of them. It's all on the MMQB NFL Deep Dive Podcast. Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL Deep Dive Podcast. I am Gary Gramling. He is Andy Benoit. We have a couple of Week 7 headlining games to talk about. We also have the mini mailbag coming up. But Andy, we're starting. I just want to point this out. We have gotten an influx of messages from angry Bears fans who are saying we are Mahomes apologists at the MMQB and we are Trubisky haters. I don't know why that would be. Because we did some stuff on Trubisky on the lead up to the draft. He's a very nice man.
He is. Yeah, yep. He and I bonded over. Yeah, we bonded over How I Met Your Mother. I had happened to see every episode that year. I didn't sit and watch it, but it was one of those I would have it playing when I unloaded the dishwasher and that kind of thing. And we got along quite well. Now here's part of the reason that as much as I like Mitchell Trubisky, that people would say we're Mahomes apologists, Trubisky haters, is Mahomes is significantly better than Trubisky, and you have to start there.
Yes, that is a good place to start. And we're gonna start Patriots Bears here. That's the first game we are breaking down. That's one of the 1 o'clocks on Sunday, a rare 1 o'clock game for the New England Patriots. But let's talk about Trubisky a little bit, because there's no denying statistically he has been very impressive over the last few games. That would be the blowout over Tampa, and his numbers were good against Miami. My opinion, Andy, my unprofessional opinion, is that he is missing way too many wide open throws still, and he got away with a couple really ugly throws back across the field on Sunday that obviously don't show up on the stats. But maybe that's just me. What have you thought of his most recent two games here?
Yeah, you mentioned that on the when we recorded Sunday night or very early Monday morning, and I put on the Dolphins film and kind of thought, oh, all right, I'm gonna be the naysayer to Gary here, and because I can see everything, I can see the all 22. He didn't get to look at that on Sunday, but no, you were exactly right. I mean, he did miss on some throws, he did miss on some reads. There's some stuff to work on with Trubisky. His pocket movement kind of ties to a lot of this as well. None of this is abnormal. I mean, we're talking about fundamental quarterbacking issues, and it'd be unusual if the guy were more developed here than less developed. It's not, you know, it's a hard thing. It's nuanced quarterbacking, but I do think he has a ways to go.
Yeah, early in the season, we had Jenny Brentes out there when they played the Seahawks on that Monday night game, and that was a Bears win. It was not a particularly impressive performance by the offense. Trubisky particularly struggled in that one. Jenny had spoken to Frank Clark after the game, and Frank Clark sort of pointed out Trubisky was really more of a one-read guy. He was very quick to pull the ball down and look to scramble, and also his footwork was kind of a mess at that point, especially when there was any sort of muddying of the pocket. I don't know. It seems like he's been a little better over the last 2 weeks. I don't know if you'd call it good, but it seems like he is improving.
He is. Now, did Frank Clark really talk about Trubisky's footwork? Did he get into that kind of detail? Because I could imagine him saying the one read thing, but I don't know how a DN would notice QB's footwork not during live action.
I will give you the exact quote. But yes, I might be combining some thoughts there. He definitely said the one read thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'll look it up while you answer my question.
Well,
and stop delaying.
One of my best post-game conversations has been with Frank Clark, too, by the way. He's a pleasure to speak with if you're talking football. And he's a pleasure to watch on film. Coaches tell you how they feel by how they play with their guys. And Matt Nagy has kept a little bit of a leash on Trubisky so far. What you do like, I mean, what do we make of this, Gary? What the difference in the Dolphins game, because it was an uneven offensive performance for a lot of the game, and then the Bears had a torrent of big plays in the second half, and some of that's on Trubisky. For example, the Gabriel touchdown, the 54-yarder versus McTyre, the backup corner for the Dolphins who got benched right after that. You know, it was a perfect deep ball throw. But that's also, and I don't remember the rest of the play. I have to go back and watch the play. But a deep ball is a great way to ease the game for your quarterback. Yeah, it's a harder throw. You're throwing downfield, but it's a one-read throw. That's the kind of play Frank Clark is talking about. So there are ways to scheme it where you can still get your QB comfortable in one reads. One-read throws do not have to be roll out and throw to the flat or scramble. That's not how it works necessarily. A well-designed offense can define some of this stuff, and you're seeing that from Matt Nagy. They're not a full field progression read drop back passing game yet.
Yeah, and you know, sort of to your point that, you know, Nagy maybe doesn't have full trust in Trubisky at this point. You just look at the end of that game. They were willing to settle for a 52-yard field goal rather than put the ball in Trubisky's hands on third and four there. Not that it's out of the realm of possibility that you can run for 4 yards with Jordan Howard there, but I think most teams, if they trust their quarterback, are letting him try and throw and pick up a first down and try and make that a much shorter field goal. I don't know. Look, they put up points the last couple of games, maybe not a ton of points, but that was in part because of the Jordan Howard goal line fumble last Sunday. But they're putting up points. They're moving the ball. Is this sort of fool's gold the last 2 weeks? Or do you see – will this be the kind of thing where Trubisky actually plays better down the stretch, but maybe the results are not quite what they have been the last 2 weeks?
That's probably a difficult question to answer, Gary, when he's playing the Patriots this week. I mean, the Patriots do – I know Mahomes just lit them up, but let's remember what the Patriots did early in that game to Mahomes and use that as an example. They blur the lines a little bit for young quarterbacks, and they're going to give them different run fronts and different looks. It's also interesting, New England – is now seeing this basically the same offense for the second week in a row, which is very rare in the NFL, especially when you're going from an AFC opponent to an NFC opponent the next week. So if Matt Nagy's to get more confident in Trubisky and Trubisky's to start playing better, and I think he's capable of that, and I think he will play better, I don't know if it's going to just – that engine's going to start smoothly this week. That might be a little bit more of a big picture item.
And defensively, look, the Bears gave up, in with the overtime included, they gave up 31 points to a Brock Osweiler offense this past week. Do you have any concerns about this defense going forward? They had been dominant, though. Granted, I mean, the run had been Seattle at home, Tampa at home, and at Arizona, so it wasn't exactly a murderer's row here that they faced.
Well, at the end of the game, our guy Albert Wilson had a 43-yard touchdown on a third down and 5 where he made Adrian Amos miss. The safeties will miss tackles once in a while. It's not good, but, you know, it happens. The next play, the film comes on, and I think, well, wait a minute, my play-by-play and my film are not synced. Something's wrong here because it says this is going to be a 75-yard touchdown, and I'm seeing Wilson catch the ball 5 yards over the middle of the field against cover 3 with every underneath defender converging on him. It's the most standard-looking football play you can imagine. I love those because you just get on to the next play. You get through the film quicker, and I let the play run, and sure enough, that was the 75-yard touchdown. So freak accidents from the Bears. I mean, do we think that their safeties and linebackers are going to give up the most basic of plays again? Or, I mean, it's bad. It's, if you're Vic Fangio, their D coordinator, your head is spinning on it. But it's not typically the kind of thing that happens repeatedly in the NFL. So I wouldn't worry too much about the Bears' D. I think they still look good within the context of how they're built to play. Their stars are playing well, and they've got pretty good role players around them.
All right, let's go on to an NFC East classic rivalry game here. This is Washington and Dallas. This one's going to be at where do they play this one? They're going to play this one at
We really ought to start getting these home stadiums figured out before we do these. Just 2 weeks in a row for us. We're the Bears cover 3 tackling on that home stadium thing.
It really is. I screwed one up earlier in the year. I thought the Packers Vikings game week 2 was at Minnesota. It was not, and I was talking about the game throughout as if it was in Minnesota. So this is. I guess my point is I'm terrible at this. But Redskins, Cowboys. Let's talk about the Cowboys defense here. Obviously, we talked a lot about Dak. We talk about Dak all the time on that Cowboys offense. We talked about it on Monday. We haven't really talked about the defense much. This defense has been really good, and they've been really good with Sean Lee not being a part of it. And that's, you know, sort of the death knell for this defense in past years has been Sean Lee injuries.
It has. I like Leighton Vander Esch a lot at linebacker, and he looks like a rookie at times too. I mean, he is not flawless, but you can absolutely see the first round talent. And then Jalen Smith, who I believe, didn't you write him off at the beginning of the season before the season, Gary?
I don't know. The story now is that I like mocked his family and.
Yeah,
said unforgivable things about him. I think he's okay now. I think he's decent now.
You're shorting him.
I was down on him. I'll say that. I was down on him the first couple years of his career. I thought he was a downgrade when Sean Lee had to go out and he had to take on a bigger role in this defense. I'll stick by that.
Yeah, sure.
Not now.
Okay. Here's what I think. I think you didn't give him enough time to come back from his knee injury, and now that he's looking healthy, we're starting to see why everybody was so excited about the man.
In my defense, a lot of people we would talk to in the lead-up to that draft, a lot of people around the league, coaches, evaluators, they said because of the nerve damage, they could not trust he would ever be 100% again. And that's why a lot of teams just took him off the board, and a lot of people were sort of jaws dropped when the Cowboys took him early in the second round. Literally everyone we talked to said he was a day three pick because of the uncertainty in the knee going forward. So I was basing it on medical data and science, things that you can rely on. Not
I was
gut
trusting
feeling.
In the man's soul. Yeah, no, I believed in his soul. And he plays with a lot of soul. It's a fun defense because they're young on the back end. They're young at corner. You're pretty young at safety. They're young at linebacker, of course. And their defensive line is starting to get figured out. Having Malik Collins back, he flashed a little bit as a pass rusher against Jacksonville. I'm not ready to say Taco Charlton's coming along, but he does look better than he did in weeks one and two. Same with Randy Gregory. DeMarcus Lawrence, we know what he is. There's a semblance of a pass-rushing lineup there. Plus, David Irving's going to enter this mix again here soon. So it's a formidable pass rush that has every indication is it's going to continue to get better. They're young and fast on the back end. They're a zone defense that has guys who can play man-to-man, and they're getting better up front. There's a lot to like about Dallas' defense. And quietly, Gary, I think they're ranked number two right now and fewest points allowed. It's not like there's potential here. They're already playing well.
Yeah, look, I mean, this defense has been great. We've talked about it since last winter. The Cowboys just don't have the weapons in the passing game to put up a lot of points. But if you can hang around, get that running game going, get a couple plays from Dak, whether it be with his legs or his arms, or particularly his right arm, you know, you can win games here, and the defense has to hold its own, and it has done that and then some. Other side of the ball here, let's talk about Alex Smith. Everyone sort of oscillates back and forth every week with Alex Smith this season. And look, the Redskins have gone win, loss, win, loss, win. They got out early last week thanks to a couple of DJ Moore fumbles, put up points. You know, Alex Smith, 163 passing yards. He hasn't had a 300-yard game this year. What is it more of the same from Alex Smith, or are you seeing a little bit more of a let's say a little bit more of a daring approach than what we see in Kansas City?
Well, we saw the daring a little more when he played Green Bay a few weeks ago. I have not seen it a whole lot since. I'm not saying we should see it, though. The Saints game, let's toss that out as just one of those nights. Against Carolina, Smith took what the defense gave him, and that's in a good way. Remember, he will execute the way the play is designed to be executed when the conditions around him are sound. He's a fair weather QB in that sense, and they had sound conditions in that game. And Jay Gruden's offense, it's still a really well designed offense. They do a tremendous job with high low route designs against zone coverage, putting one receiver behind a zone defender, another receiver in front of him, so the defender can't be right. They did struggle against cover two a little bit, but Adrian Peterson and what he's bringing to the running game, they're not going to see a whole lot of cover two. So I'm optimistic for the offense. what you always have to remember with Smith, though, is he needs very nice conditions around him because he's not a pocket mover. When he moves within the pocket, he very often, he's actually done it less this year than usual, but he very often breaks himself down. And that's, you can't function as a passer when you do that. So you need to give him a good pocket and clearly defined reads. And when you do, he's a very effective quarterback.
All right, let's go Saints-Ravens in Baltimore. Look, basically the top-scoring offense versus the top-scoring defense right now. Offense has made all the headlines this year, obviously. Ravens are dominating defensively. You saw it last week, and you know, we've talked about it a little bit. A lot of it has to do with the safeties, what they're able to do on that side of the ball.
And it's not just Jefferson and Weddle, who are very good, interchangeable, disguise-oriented. It's also Anthony Levine at basically their dime linebacker. He's gotten better each week, and that gives them a three-safety package. You're very good out of it. They do a lot of things. They're aggressive schematically. Their players are fierce and aggressive. Za'Darius Smith, we talked about the other night. Gary, I don't know if my I think Mark Moravec edited my deep dive this week. And by the way, you heard he banned me from using the word dynamic anymore. I can't
yes,
write that in the air.
That came from the top.
Willowy. That didn't come from that. That came from some guy emailed Talkback at the MMQB, and Moravec sided with the emailer.
No. That was not some guy. That was Chris Stone.
Oh dear! I apologize. The head of SI. I thought that was some guy. I will have to revise my reaction to that whole thing, though. Yeah, I do use dynamic too much, and I can improve, and I will. Darn it all. But I don't know if you saw that article that where the dynamic got banned. But what do you think of my theory that teams should consider doing what Baltimore does on third down, which is amoeba fronts? Everybody's roving around. It's blitz looks. They might blitz. They might not. You don't know where the guys are dropping into zone coverage. Just kind of those third down looks. What if teams started doing that more on first and second down and living with the up and down run results as a way to combat these high-flying first down passing offenses that are dominating the league?
No, I think that's – look, I think it's a creative approach. I think it times call for a creative approach at this point on the defensive side of the ball. No, I read that. I think it's a good idea. I'd be interested to see teams do that. And, of course, once teams start doing that more, you know, you'll have offenses adjust by running the ball a little bit more effectively and the whole thing comes in a circle of life. I believe that's what the song is about. But yeah, that's I like that idea.
Yeah, it's and the reason, I mean, basically what we're saying is defenses should worry less about being gap sound against the run, and live with the results as an effort to curtail the passing because. Everybody's asking right now, why is the league seeing this offensive explosion? And I think a big reason why is offenses, I know the rules are a factor, and that's a big factor. But offenses have gotten so good at beating defenses when they get them into predictable looks. And it's those predictable looks come from stopping the run. That's almost strictly what they come from. So maybe something radical to consider. Baltimore would be an interesting team to see if they do it as well, because you got to have big, scare. I almost said dynamic. Oh my goodness. You got to have big, scary defensive linemen, I think, who can win one-on-one if you're going to start playing with amoeba fronts on a regular basis.
Well, how do the Saints match up? I mean, look, Drew Brees, you get a veteran quarterback here. I don't know how much confusion you're going to cause for him, but how do you counter the Saints offense?
Well, I just pulled up this email from Moravec. You're right. It did come from Chris Stone. I don't know how I saw
I wouldn't
that.
Lie it's about
some
that.
Guy from I don't know how. I can't believe I saw it. Boy, I'm glad I reacted as tamely as I did. What was your question now that I have my breath and heartbeat back?
Yes. So Drew Brees, they're facing Drew Brees. Presumably, you're not going to cause a lot of confusion in Drew Brees' mind. If you're the Ravens, do you go with that same approach? Do you do something differently when you're facing Brees?
Well, remember, you're also facing Breeze's blockers. He's got to get everyone on the same page, which is another reason I think, and I don't. We'll move the discussion back to this game in a second, but another reason those amoeba fronts could work in the run game is because run blocking is so assignment-based, and you need all five linemen to read it the same way. When you start manipulating the fronts and making them hazy, just like you do on pass protection, it gets more complicated. So if I'm the Ravens, I do that against Breeze. I don't go easy and play it safer because I trust Drew Brees will figure us out and exploit us, even though he probably will at times. You still want to go and attack his blockers and his running backs and all the guys around him and make them play slower. And also, in the very least, if you do want to go more coverage-oriented against Brees, at least show the blitzes and then drop back into underneath zone. And that's something teams can do more. The Saints actually do it a lot on their defensive side. Rush three and drop eight into coverage. More teams are doing that as well.
All right. Well, anything else on this game, Andy? Anything we're missing as far as these two Titans going at each other here?
As far as the Saints offense and the Ravens defense, I would mention Baltimore has some corners who can travel a little bit and match up. Marlon Humphrey's taking number one receivers this year. Jimmy Smith is getting back in the rotation on the right side. Brandon Carr is still in the mix. There's depth and there are options at corner, which is that can't hurt you when you're facing the Saints. And the other thing about the Saints is, did you see Laquan Smith in their last game against the Monday Nighter against Washington?
I did not.
Well, he is. I think it's a name we're going to be talking about more as the season goes along. Ted Ginn has been tremendous for the Saints. I mean, by what we and I said Laquan, I meant Traquan.
Oh, you're talking about Traquan.
I was just frantically looking through the Saints roster. It's Treadwell's doing it. I've just gotten used to Laquan Treadwell, and then they introduced Traquan Smith to the league, and I'm just trying to sort out all these Quans and apostrophes. Traquan Smith will be in the league and will not be in the position Laquan Treadwell's in now, where he's on the basically second contract bubble. Traquan Smith, I think, is going to be a really good starting player in the NFL, and I think it'll happen this season. I think he's going to supplant Ted Ginn, who's played very well.
I love Traquan Smith. My favorite thing about Traquan Smith at UCF was how good he was basically in the moments before the catch between late hands and those subtle little shoves at the end of plays to create a little bit of late separation. I love Traquan Smith. He was one of my favorite receivers in this draft. Let's go Texans Jaguars, and let's start with the Jaguars. Look, Jaguars gave up a lot of points to Kansas City, and you could kind of write that off to, okay, well, everyone gives up a lot of points to Kansas City. Last week they gave up 40 points to the Cowboys, who, as we've mentioned basically for the last 6 months, have one of the meeker offenses in football. What's the issue right here with the Jaguars, or is this just do you chalk it up as to two of those days?
Well, two of those days had the same factor behind them, which is their defensive line is not generating any pressure right now. Calais Campbell was nowhere to be found in this last game. I never thought I'd say that about Calais Campbell, and he's not the only one. Jacksonville's D-line right now does not look like Jacksonville's D-line, and that's the problem. The corners don't get figured out. I love their linebackers. I think they're actually playing quite well. They run better than anyone in the league at their position. The defensive, for all this to matter, though, the defensive line has to become more destructive.
Well, I mean, look, if you're talking about issues up front in the defensive line, facing this Texans team kind of cures what ails you a little bit. I mean, great. Look, Dallas and Kansas City, those are two of, you know, probably the top five offensive lines in football right now.
Good point. Yes, and Dallas's offensive line's looking like its usual self, even with Frederick out. So that's a factor. But you know what? Jacksonville's D-line, we're talking about what was last year the best in the NFL. So it's still strength on strength. It's not like they shouldn't be opponent-based. They have a lot of talent. The only guy who's really looked good week in and week out so far, I'd say two of them, Marcel Darius and run defense, but that's limited, though. That's just 35 snaps a game or so against the run. And then Yannick Ngakoue is one of the most agile pass rushers. He's better this year than he was last year. I am highly impressed with him. Everybody else, though, has been up and down, and especially down lately.
Let's talk about the Texans very specifically, because they are getting a lot of heat for this. Bill O'Brien is, and rightfully so, with the results the last 2 weeks. Their red zone offense is becoming an embarrassment. We all saw Sunday night all the problems they had punching it in from the 1 yard line. And in that game, they had a couple plays where Deshaun Watson scrambled a little bit. And look, when you're sniffing the goal line, you get a little bit aggressive. And Watson took some huge hits in that game. It seemed like they tried to get away from that last week against Buffalo. They didn't have a ton of opportunities, but when they were down a field goal late, they got a pass interference in the end zone, first and goal on the one with about 3 minutes to go. And over the next three plays, they moved back 6 yards and had to settle for a game-tying field goal. Now, on that series, they had they tried to run the ball. They got no push up front and lost a yard. They tried a little jet sweep. It wasn't a jet sweep. It's the Kiki QT came across Deshaun Watson's face, and that didn't work. That lost yardage, and it's just not working down there. And you'd think, if nothing else, DeAndre Hopkins is the best contested catch receiver in football. You think you could get something going, if not just getting him in one-on-one coverage. At least he'll draw a couple of defenders and open something else up.
Yes, I would. By the way, we're going to get to see Jalen Ramsey versus DeAndre Hopkins again here. That'll be fun. I don't think Ramsey's been as good this year as he was last year. I think he plays with too much cushion at times. But against Hopkins, his style, that's a fun – they have had some really intense battles. That's been a fun one over time. If I'm Houston, I'm moving Hopkins all over the place, all around the formation, especially down in the red zone like you're saying, and my offense completely goes through him.
Yeah, and this will this will be the first time Deshaun Watson is getting a start against the Jaguars here, which should be interesting, because the Jaguars completely destroyed the Texans in both their matchups last year. Tom Savage started both. Deshaun Watson played the second half of that opening week blowout. Let's go to Panthers Eagles. We talked about Eric Washington taking over for Steve Wilks a little bit this past offseason. We really haven't talked about it since, and now you have a handful of games on tape here. What is this Panthers D under Eric Washington? And, for the first time last week, we had Thomas Davis back, so you had the full complement of linebackers.
Yeah, well, remember I told you I saw Eric Washington at the combine walking down the in the convention center, so you can see him coming from a mile away. And I kind of cornered him and said, hey, you know, who are you going to be? Are you going to be Sean McDermott or Steve Wilks? And what I meant to ask, of course, was, are you going to play traditional 4-3 Panthers zone defense like McDermott, or are you going to be a fire zone edge blitzing coordinator like Wilks was? So I said, who are you going to be, McDermott or Wilks? And he said, I'm going to be Eric Washington. And I felt so bad because I didn't mean to belittle the man. But after we got over that, after we got past that faux pas, I got him to say, you know, he believes in the four-man rush. And we've seen that. And I think that's what a lot of people around him were expecting, is we're going to see more traditional 4-3 zone scheme from Carolina. What we have seen is a little bit more of a mixture, though. It has been the 4-3 stuff that we associate with Carolina, but as the season has progressed, we've seen more of the fire zone edge blitzes that we saw last year under Wilks. My sense overall, Gary, and what was kind of revealing to me, was the play calling defensively at the end of the Giants game for Carolina, where Saquon Barkley had what looked like the game-winning touchdown against them. Mm-hmm. That was before the 63-yard field goal. The Panthers basically changed up their coverage call and their tactics and their looks. They changed it up almost every snap. And my sense from the way that game went, it wasn't a team being diverse and pulling some stuff out of their back pocket at the end. It's a team still kind of searching for its defensive identity. And I think Washington's still trying to get a feel for exactly what they're going to be.
All right. Well, they got a test this week. Carson Wentz, big night last Thursday night against the Giants. Lots of third and long conversions. So, We'll get a better read on this defense then. Let's open the mailbag. Let's get to a couple of questions here before we sign off. First one's coming from Dante, and now this is leftover from last week. We promised we'd answer this. Dante wants John Elway to go after Joe Flacco this upcoming offseason. So I guess this is let's just say it's not going well with Case Keenum. I don't know if Case Keenum at this rate is going to be the quarterback in Denver in 2019, since they have the out with that with the contract there. Joe Flacco, though, I mean, this has been interesting. He's been a little bit up and down, but obviously he's been better in 2018, and the Ravens are winning games with him. Are you open to the possibility of Flacco being the Ravens quarterback in 2019?
Yeah, or the Broncos quarterback, you mean?
No, the Ravens quarterback or the Broncos quarterback.
Yes, if they finish strongly, if let's say they get 20% better than they have been so far, which is entirely possible. They have Hayden Hurst coming in now. They're a tight end driven offense, and they're getting their first round rookie tight end, or their top guy there. Their running game's getting better. I love their offensive line this year. You could say that Flacco should get better as the season goes along. And if that's the case, then what you have is a win now team because of that defense. And that will be a long, hard conversation to have at the end of the year. So as far as like Denver getting Flacco, I mean, that's just, you know, I understand why that's a discussion, but we can have that discussion anytime over the next 8 months. The right here and now, I think Flacco and the Ravens, there's reason for optimism there.
Next one's from Vincent. This is a question after my own heart. Two-parter. Do you think pass interference calls should be a 15-yard penalty instead of a spot foul? Are you sticking your guns on that, Andy? You're still a spot foul guy?
Absolutely, yes, because you need to discourage the possibility of pass interference. You have to force defenders to play with the right technique. So it's not just the plays that are flagged for PI. It's also all the plays that would have been flagged if the PI threat were not there. Because if they're throwing the ball 50 yards downfield and you're beat, you have every reason in the world to tackle a receiver. And in the NFL, you have to believe, this is where it's different than college, I think. In the NFL, you have to believe the ball is going to be thrown and caught. These are high-level players. They execute efficiently. So I am all for punishing the defense when they get beat. Almost every PI call stems from a defensive player getting beat at some point.
And I still say split it into flagrant and not flagrant and let the officials sort it out. Let them make some judgment calls on this. These spot fouls are insane. But Vincent's better point, which I am totally it's a question, but I'm going to make my point on this. Why is defensive holding an automatic first down, but offensive holding is not any sort of extra punishment, and defensive holding is only 5 yards? The automatic first down for illegal contact, defensive, that stuff's got to go. There's no automatic first downs. If you don't get the yardage to gain with the penalty yardage, you don't get a first down. And I'm fine if you want to say, okay, then we're going to make defensive holding 10 yards, just like offensive holding is a 10-yard penalty. But this is I don't understand the logic behind this, other than let's just give more first downs out.
I can understand. Now, remember, though, if you get flagged for offensive holding, it's a 10-yard penalty. That is like getting a first down, because you can't remove or give a down to the offense like that for a penalty. So you do it through the yardage, and 10 yards is what it takes to get a first down. So now you have to get two first downs on offense if you get a holding foul. So it's more apples to apples than it seems.
Then make offensive holding 5 yards and loss of down. How about that?
I might incentivize holding.
I hate automatic first downs. It just makes no sense to me. Last question here. This is from Rob. I'm a 49ers fan. Love to know what is happening with our defensive line, particularly the three first-rounders. That, of course, would be DeForest Buckner, a preseason favorite of Andy's, and I would assume still a favorite of Andy's, considering what's happened so far this year. Eric Armstead and Solomon Thomas. You're still excited about Buckner, I presume.
I am. Yeah, I said he would be a defensive player of the year candidate. He's not going to get that because they're going to finish 5-11, and yeah, their defense will probably rank 25th or worse or something. So, but he has played up to that level still. He's not the reason that they're struggling. Those other two guys, Armstead's not a fit in the scheme, and they know that. Robert Saleh kind of intimated that to me once when we were talking in his office. Armstead's a talent, but I think he's a better fit as an interior type of player in a different scheme than a true 4-3 gap penetrating scheme. And then Solomon Thomas, to be frank, Garrett, and I like him a lot. I do think he's a nice talent. I root for him personally, but he's been disappointing this year. He has not taken the step forward that you would guess. And what's really revealing is they started giving some of his nickel defensive tackle snaps to Sheldon Day, the former Jaguar who they brought in, who's played pretty well. But he's your number three overall pick a year ago has now lost snaps to your fringe free agent signing.
All right, that's going to be a wrap for this week, Andy. We'll be back with the Monday morning podcast, of course. Thanks, as always, to researchers Reed Foster and Ryan Taylor for making us sound smart, and producer Shelby Royce and the guys at Cadence 13 who make us sound good. Most of all, thank you to you guys for listening to this episode of the MMQB NFL Deep Dive Podcast. We have the Albert Breer Show with Jenny Brentis and Connor Orr every Wednesday. Andy and I are on Mondays. Gambling Show on Fridays. That is me. That is Jimmy Traina. That is Scott Grambling. It is a great network of podcasts. Please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. See you guys Monday morning.